Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome to Strange Familiars. How are you doing, Allison?
I'm doing well.
You didn't join us for our Christmas questions with Monster Fuzz.
It was a last minute decision to just make dinner instead because I knew I'd have to do that afterwards. So I thought you're probably safe hands.
Well, we got a lot of questions from folks on Discord, from Monster Fuzz Discord. I think that they're patrons as well, from our patrons on Patreon. We just had a fun time answering questions, but we're not going to let you out of it that easily, Allison. We're going to make you answer all those same questions.
That you didn't have time to answer.
all the questions we did answer that you weren't there for, and then the ones that I didn't get to.
Oh, okay.
So we're going to do a patron show for that.
Sounds good.
Oh, yes. The mugs are back in stock. We have Strange Familiars mugs. We have 2 Bigfoot mugs. We have the Bigfoot with Orb, the one we had before. It's the cover to Where the Footprints End, Volume 2. And we have my Bigfoot Big Heart design, the Bigfoot holding a heart.
That was my suggestion.
That was your suggestion.
Make some of those.
And it's a good one. So we have all those in stock right now at our Etsy shop, or you can go to strangefamiliars.com/merch. Before I get to the questions with Monster Fuzz, just want to thank our patrons. Thank you so much. Thank you for everything you do. If you like Strange Familiars and you'd like to help us make Strange Familiars, you can become a patron at Patreon. It's patreon.com/strangefamiliars. All of our patrons get commercial-free versions of the weekly show, plus extra content. Full episodes, bonus episodes. Every month we do at least one. Sometimes we do more than one. You can check out all the options, again, at patreon.com/strangefamiliars. If you're on Apple Podcasts, there's an option there as well. It's called Patron of the Strange. You get the weekly commercial-free shows and the extra shows monthly as well. All right. Let's go get to the meeting of the minds with the Monster Fuzz guys. Welcome, Rob and Eamon. The Monster Fuzz fellas are here, and I'm there.
Oh,
we're together.
Virtually.
That's an intro and a half there, Tim. We're actually drinking, because it's Christmas, it's a Monster Fuzz tradition. We have a bit of mulled wine in front of us, Tim.
Oh, nice, nice.
Are you a fan of the mulled wine?
I love it.
It's good stuff, right?
My friend and Stonebreath bandmate left me with a case of it when he made his own. Really? And when he moved to England, he left me with a case of it.
Yeah, it's that diabetes wine that's fairly tasty
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah. It's like, sweet. What would make wine better? If it tasted more like Coke, you're like, well, yeah, that's true. Hot Coke. This is way better.
Yeah, that's lovely. It's very good. We, you know, you make like a, I don't know what way your mate makes it, but like I make like a kind of a syrup base for it. And then you add the booze to it once you've made the syrup base. But the syrup base has got all your... you know, your citrus peels and your cinnamon sticks and cloves and all that stuff. But very, very tasty and very wintry as well, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so today we've got, we did the same as we did at Halloween, right? Where basically we asked our patrons for some Christmassy questions. And so we've got a bunch here. So Tim will bounce back and forth with what we've got. Also, what are you doing for Christmas this year? What's yours and Allison's plans?
Oh, just chilling out. Just taking it easy, mostly. I do a solstice walk with Chad, and my buddy John's going to accompany us this year. So that's a big fun, but we usually do that, you know, the evening of solstice. And then after that, it's pretty much stay home and do family stuff.
Yeah, well, nice. We're much the same. I think I'll try and get a bit of a hike in maybe on the 26th, maybe walk off that turkey belly and stuff like that. What does actually, before we get into it, what does a Christmas dinner look like in the Renner household?
Probably turkey. Yeah. And stuffing and some form of vegetable, and I'm sure there'll be. My daughter is a fantastic baker.
Lovely.
So I'm sure she will make. She's vegan, so she makes vegan baked stuff. Lovely. But you wouldn't know. Yeah. You wouldn't know. It's really good. It's really, really.
I'm just saying, like, there's a vegan. I was going to say there's a vegan couple. There's two vegan twins in Ireland called the Happy Pair, and they're vegan. But they have a great cookbook that, like, I always use. Like, I'm not vegan, like, but I'll cook from it all the time. The reason I like cooking vegan stuff is because it uses so much fresh natural ingredients, and like, it's all plant based. So obviously, super good for you. And it's nice, like, to have. Yeah. I used to do maybe 3 or 4 days of vegan food, you know, and then balance it out with a big dirty steak.
Yeah, you know? Makes sense. Just so your body was like, "What the fuck?"
When I would go on tour, I would always eat vegan because I can eat cheese and stuff, but I'm a little sensitive to it. So I figured, like, if I'm on tour, I'll just eat vegan, and then I know I'll be safe and I'll have less incidents where I have to get up off a stage and run to the bathroom.
Gandhi's Revenge is the college.
It's a funny one. We're doing a weird thing this year. So we're just in our house as well, just kind of getting the last bits sorted out. And my wife is vegetarian and Brazilian. So we're having bacalhau, which is like a cured cod pie. Which I think my 70-year-old parents might have a hard time wrapping their heads. They're like, where's the turkey and the ham, though? So more to follow.
That's a revolutionary.
Yeah, my dad, you can tell he's not into it. He's like, oh, I can't wait to have Christmas with you in your new house. You know, he's like, a deadly fish. Wow.
Yeah, but that's super common, right? Everywhere seems to do fish. Like, it seems to be a strictly kind of UK, Ireland, and then America thing to do with the turkey and the ham.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Everywhere else, like in Poland, they'll keep
a lot of,
like,
they keep the fish in the bath for a little while. Yeah.
You ever heard of that, Tim?
No, we do. We do shrimp on Christmas Eve, so we'll do a bunch of steamed shrimp for Christmas Eve.
Nice,
but usually for Christmas, it's usually some form of bird.
Yeah. I prefer chicken. I'm actually a chicken man, which is controversial in and of itself.
I think. Objectively, chicken tastes better than turkey.
Yeah.
But turkey is just bigger. There's more of it. You can feed more people. Mm-hmm. I guess that's the logic behind it historically, right?
I think I like the turkey for the holidays just as a change because I eat a lot of chicken otherwise. But if I had to give one up, I would keep the chicken because it's too versatile. It's too good. Yeah.
Yeah, get them chicken thighs into you. I'm a big fan of the old chicken thighs.
Yeah, no casserole. Get a slow cooker.
I'm starting to get hungry. You chicken thighs. We'll have to make a chicken
stew. Oh, you got yourself a stew, son. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Allison made one last night.
Yeah, nice. I'm making one tomorrow. I literally bought all the ingredients. You can't go wrong. So, Tim, do you want to pick the first question? You've got some from your listeners, yeah?
Yeah. And as I said last time, I'm just using people's first names from Discord. If they're using a screen name or something, it's going to be that. I'm not trying to figure out everybody's real name. So this one is from Jason on Discord. Mm-hmm. Which is a better Christmas movie? Die Hard, Gremlins, Lethal Weapon, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, or A Long Kiss Goodnight?
I'll answer this really quickly, and I'll just say Die Hard for me is like the definitive. Like,
he missed out there. No Batman Returns, which is a very Christmassy Christmas movie. Action.
Do you like, so is Batman Returns your favorite? Is what you're saying?
No, Die Hard 2 would be my favorite.
Yeah, Die Hard 1.
Specifically 2 for me. Because I think there's more snow, so it's more Christmassy.
Yeah, I mean, what's not to love? Killing Germans.
All right, I'm going
to
get a lot of messages about this. I've never seen Die Hard.
Ah, Tim.
But that just means that he's about to discover his favorite Christmas film. How exciting is that, like?
I know, you should. Honestly, Tim, if you get the chance, I think it's on Disney Plus. If you get a chance over Christmas, it's definitely worth watching. Like, yeah. I'm not a huge action film guy, actually. As a matter of fact, me and Eamon were only talking about it last week. Like, I haven't seen the John Wicks or anything, but Die Hard is a really well done action film.
It's like, that, it's got that proper like 80s, late 80s, early 90s feel to it. But it's the thing that Die Hard does, because you had like Stallone and Schwarzenegger, and it was very muscle, steroid, break everybody up, whatever. Whereas John McClane seems a bit like an everyman. He's struggling to keep his marriage together. He's, you know, I think Die Hard's a great movie based on a book as well. Apparently,
is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. That's why it's so good.
That's why it's so good. Literary master.
Of that list, I've only seen Gremlins and Lethal Weapon, and both of those I saw so long ago that I barely remember. I know Lethal Weapon from the Always Sunny parodies more than I do from the original. Yeah. And Gremlins, I mean, I was a kid when my mom took me to see that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't have any. Among those, I don't have any. I'll take your word for it, and I'll pick Die Hard even though I haven't seen it.
What would be your favorite Christmas film if you had to choose?
Well, I'm going to get into this. There's another question about Christmas horror movies, and it's going to come up there. So let's save it for that one.
I like it.
Right. I'm going to ask a more simple one, Tim, because I'm just kind of curious about your answer on this, really, because I'm guessing you're not a super materialistic guy. But Graham Young asks, what would you guys both really want for Christmas this year? It's three guys in this idea. Is there any gifts that you have your eyes on, Tim?
Oh, geez.
Cause like, there's nothing that you, one thing that I discovered recently is that they make rings out of dinosaur bones. I'm still waiting for someone to buy one for me.
That's super still cool, waiting for his girlfriend to propose to him. So.
No, I'd like an experience. So, you know,
I get that.
If someone were to gift me that trip to Ireland, you know,
I'd say I can tell you this because my wife can't be arsed listening to me on the podcast, so she won't know till afterwards. But I was trying to figure out what to get her for Christmas. You know the way there's always the stuff, and you're kind of, you know, whatever you get, like sometimes it can seem paltry if you're like, well, here's some perfume and blah, blah, blah. Like, but I got her, it's kind of an experience and something you can keep, I guess. There's a place in Dublin called iMaisie, and what they do is they take a massively high resolution close-up shot of your iris.
All right.
And so, you know, when you see like, you can see like all the little intricate details in your eye. So
cataracts and all that.
Yeah, cataracts. Yeah. They'll be like, ooh, actually you have a problem. Our doctor's right next door. There's a whole thing going on there. Revolving door to the doctor. But they make these really nice portraits of your eye, and it looks kind of very cosmic and trippy. Oh, yeah. Cool. So, and you can get them in different like, plate metal, or you can get these kind of strange canvases or like acrylic sort of stuff. So
that's interesting. I want to see that.
Yeah, I must show you. I have a thing for her, but when I give it to her, I'll show you anyway. But yeah, it's a really interesting looking.
Yeah, I think I'm Steam Deck is what I want off Santa. Have you heard of Steam Deck, Tim?
What's this?
It's a portable gaming device,
basically. Oh, okay. Does it run on Steam?
It does. But not really.
Yeah, that would be cool.
I know my son has Steam on his gaming computer.
But. Yeah, I thought you were going to say, "Is it Steam powered?" But no, unfortunately, it's not. So
did that used to be their little tagline? Yeah, Steam powered.
Been,
yeah,
it could have been.
That's a good idea.
So yeah, it's basically, Tim, like you called it. It runs your Steam library in a handheld gaming device. They're really cool. They released a OLED version with a really nice bright screen recently. So hopefully Santa brings that to me, you know. But yeah, that'd be it. But experiences, I think, are the best shout. So yeah, Tim, I think you're all right with the holiday is always a good one, I think, because it's a memory, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, while we're on presents, the next question from us is from Joseph on Discord, and he said, I'd love to know everyone's all-time favorite Christmas gift.
Yeah, we got this one too. The all-time Christmas gift for me was, there was one Christmas where I did really well. I don't know, the stars aligned, and I got a Nintendo 64 and a mountain bike. In the same year,
Nintendo 64 and a mountain bike.
I was like, "What's going on
here?" And I didn't ask for a mountain bike.
I didn't ask for a mountain bike.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
But you know, there's always a trick and a treat. So I got the mountain bike, but my ass fell off that mountain bike a lot of times before I learned how to ride it properly. So, you know.
Well, look.
But I think that was, yeah, I did really well that year.
That's a good year. Yeah. I remember when I was a really small kid, my sister's like 2 years younger than me. I asked for a train set and my parents used to put the presents under the tree and like at the right side would be my sister's presents, the left side would be mine. But they had made this train set up in the middle and I was like, oh wow. And I kind of knew, I was quite young, but I was still like, this is like a little bit too young for me, but still it's badass because the bridge went up and down. Like I was that young, you know? So I was having a great time playing with this. I was like, look, what's that? You got me my train set. My mom was like, no, that's for your sister, actually.
No.
And I think they had got me, do you remember there used to be just red and blue, like, army men and a big base and I was like
But hang on there, this is supposed to be your best present then, and you're just losing.
Sorry, I was saying this is a riff on that, this is the present that I thought was my best present that was pulled untimely from me.
It's like childhood trauma.
Best present probably
I just gave you an Evil Ryu figure. Like,
that was pretty awesome. Yeah, that was pretty good. I gave you a Michael Jackson figure, though, so we're doing good today.
Evan Bobby, a Michael Jackson action figure for Christmas.
It's got a little stand so you can make him do that thing where he leans forward. It doesn't look official now that I see the packaging. When I saw it online, it looked official. I'd say mine's probably not too dissimilar to Rob's. I got a Super, I think maybe either the year I got a Game Boy when I was 7,
Game Boys were cool.
And Super Nintendo maybe when I was 9, but they stand out.
What about you, Tim?
Well, when I was a kid, I used to really like these, you guys were probably too young for them, they were called Micronauts, they're little action figures, but you could kind of pull them apart and use all the different parts with other things, cool. Kind of like super sci-fi Legos, you know?
Oh, nice, cool. Nice. Cool.
But I remember getting some of those I really liked as a kid. But the one that really stands out in my head, and I still remember this clearly to this day, I had asked for a BMX bike. So this is the 70s, pre-mountain bikes. But I really, really wanted a BMX bike. And I wanted like a real one because I used to sell these kind of cheesy imitation BMX bikes and just kind of, they were regular bikes that looked, but I was really like, you know, insistent to my parents, I want a real BMX bike. You know? And I remember because a couple of years before that, my brother had gotten like one of the fake ones. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, I want a like a real BMX bike. Mm-hmm. And I came down in the middle of the night to use the bathroom. It's like 4 a.m. And I saw my dad putting together a bike and I looked over and I swear it was one of those cheesy, like imitation ones.
Oh, no.
And I got really disappointed. And I knew like, okay, I have to still be psyched for this when I get up in the morning.
Yeah.
I have to pretend to like it, you know? So I go back upstairs and go back to sleep and they wake, you know, usually I would be up early in the morning tearing open presents, but this, I was so like dreading having to pretend to like this bike that I just, you know, laid in bed or whatever. Yeah. Finally, my parents came and wake me up, you know, oh, come on, don't you want to get up and open presents? I'm like, all right. I went down. Now, I don't know if my dad pulled a trick on me. Or what, but there was like the real BMX bike was there. The one, nice. You know, like the one I wanted. And I was like, what? Cause I was so surprised and I, you know, completely flipped out. And I mean, I rode the heck out of that bike too. I mean, it was great times on that as a kid.
That's cool. Awesome. Isn't it? When you like back then, you know, when you're a child and you just don't have any sort of disposable income and you're basically relying on your parents to get you stuff. Like how much you value that one gift is like, crazy.
Oh yeah.
Cause like, I'm not big on the whole, and look, I'm a huge consumer, so I'm not going to sit here and try and say like, oh, I'm against consumer culture and all that, because I buy bunches of stuff all the time, and I'm very much about that at Christmas. I like buying people good gifts too. But I think there is something to be said for like, you really do get value out of stuff when you're given it at Christmas as a kid. Like I had I don't know what it's like nowadays with kids. I'm not sure how they are with things, but like, you know, my N64, for example, that year I got that, like I played that so much. Like,
oh yeah.
And that's like, it's good bang for buck. I mean, I feel like nowadays you'd probably spend that amount and blast through it and be bored of it in a month or two, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, there's just, I guess when we were younger, there wasn't really a lot to do.
No.
Like, you know, you could go play with your friends.
Everything was in black and white as well.
Yeah, yeah, I remember. I just came at the end of that. What's this new thing? That's color, son. Enjoy. No,
black and white.
Yeah, you know, like you'd read a lot. Like I find it hard to read now because I'm so addled with all the flashing lights and everything that I can turn on in an instant.
I'm the same. Do you find that same, like with reading? And like, do you still pick up a book?
I have to read. For The Flowered Path, I have a very good relationship with this one publisher, Sophia Institute Press, and they send me books constantly. Right. So I'm not a huge video game guy, but I would pick up, you know, and play a little bit here and there, but it's way down now. Yeah, I'm just reading all the time. So it's kind of almost like I have to do it, but it's a good thing because I've read more books in the past year than I have probably in the, you know, 5 years previous to it.
It must be really interesting as well, because I'd imagine a lot of like, that's, is that sort of like people talking about scripture, or is it, the actual scripture itself they're selling you, or
it's usually either like lives of a saint, or like I interviewed somebody about exorcisms this week, and you know, it's different things. It's, you know, it's something to do with the church usually, but it's usually saints are usually somehow involved.
Yeah, that's great though, like because you're so interested in that anyway, do you know?
Yeah,
that's awesome, and you're going to be getting so much more of that than you ever could from a documentary, or you know, like a YouTube documentary or something like that.
Right.
Like that, the book's so much more density to it.
Oh yeah.
I'd love to be reading like in a sort of voracious way. Cause like there's something really cool when you get into a book and you're just like engrossed and you can't stop turning pages, you know, but I find it very hard to get into that sort of zone nowadays. So I find I actually value nowadays books that are more broken up into digestible things. I don't know if you've ever read any books on NDEs, Tim, but when we were researching an episode, I picked up a couple of NDE books, and there's one like, and I was just reading through it kind of at a leisurely pace, and it was nice because it was just broken up into kind of digestible sections, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
But I think I have one here. This is an interesting one. We're going to be getting some sort of predictions here. So Tim, I'll let you answer this one first. Andrew Menz writes in, if you were visited by the ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future, what would you expect to see?
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. So.
So is this a corrective thing, or are we going over our mistakes, Scrooge style?
It could be, because that's how it works, right? Isn't it? It's from the is it A Christmas Carol? Is it?
Yeah.
And in the ghost appears, and or the it is a ghost, and he shows
the
ghost
of Christmas past, present, and future. Yeah,
and how does it work in that? It shows you.
I know that it shows him his I can't remember past exactly. I'm assuming it's just,
I think it was like showed him like he was happy as a child.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the sort of the present was, you know, kind of showed him being Scroogey.
Yeah.
And the future was like, hey, you know, nobody likes you.
I think it showed like, you know, wasn't the kid they were trying to get a turkey for Christmas or something, and they were showing the other people, and then it showed him when he was dead, and like no one was bothered going to his funeral and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Yeah. I do think as a representation of the ghost of Christmas future in the Muppets Christmas Carol, I love the way they did the kind of Reaper-ish ghost of Christmas future.
Oh, did they?
I love the Muppets Christmas Carol.
It's a great movie. It's a great, great movie.
It's really good. Really good.
It's not a month. I've probably seen that, but that long ago.
They do. They like, it just looks, it's Jim Henson. It's like Star Wars. Like it looks good, you know?
Yeah.
It's funny. It's fun. It's just, but it sticks to the story, but it's good. I really like it.
So I don't know. What would we reckon that
you're... Oh, geez. I don't know. I have no clue. You know, if it's correcting me, I'm sure it would show me, you know, some, well, I mean, I did have a happy, if lonely childhood, you know, that's why that bike was so good. I grew up, you know, on the farm, when any other kids around my age, and put that, I could roll with that, you know,
put
some miles on those wheels. You know, so I'm sure would, you know, maybe it would show me, you know, discovering drawing and how much I like that. And then, probably my misspent, teenage years, I'm sure, like look what you did. You could have, done, you know, blank, blank, and blank, and you squandered them. the future, I don't know. Let's hopefully somebody's showing up at my funeral. I don't know.
We'll go. We'll make a triangular promise here where we'll all go to each other's funeral. And whoever's left last, I'm sorry, but it is what it is.
Yeah. To hire some mourners.
What are they called? Keeners, is it?
Keeners, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think much the same as myself. Yeah, if you're talking about negative stuff, I suppose when I was a kid, I was a bit of a shit, and then I think all kids are maybe a bit of a shit. There's probably some kids that were quite good. I mean, I'd say you were quite a good kid.
I don't think so. I think not like that. I was a bad kid. I think I was a regular enough kid. But I think a big part of growing up is actually learning empathy. People always say, you know, oh, what if you turn into a psychopath? And it's like, no, that's your baseline. Like when you're a baby, you're just a psychopath and you have to unlearn psychopathy. And I do think the older you get, I find one of the things for me is the older I get, not so much that I have these massive regrets, but I do look back on things I did. And with the foresight that you have now, kind of go, oh, I wish I had handled that differently, or I wish I had done something slightly earlier, either for me to not to my advantage, but it would have been a more sensible move, or you may have like hurt someone's feelings without meaning to something like that. And I'm sure I'll look back on the age I am now in 10 years and be like, oof, fucked up there. Like, you know, it's. And so I think that's my ghost of career. I think everything for me is just feel guilt. A head full of tombstones, yeah.
you're in general, you're quite good natured, though, I think. And you have less arsehole tendencies than I would, I think. So I think that weighs on your conscience a bit more.
I think maybe. I would
shoulder all of being an arsehole a lot easier than
you do a lot of very kind things for people.
I do, but I probably can also wouldn't shoulder all being an arsehole. You're okay with it? Yeah. No, I don't care.
You can't hurt me.
If someone thinks I'm an asshole, I don't really mind. Like, that's fine. Like, they can think that. I think as well, I don't know, Tim, actually, that's a good question while we're on this topic. Like, how do you feel about negative reviews? Because, like, it's something that when you put yourself out there, you know, no one wants to have to listen to that shite, right? But it's kind of inevitable. Like, you can't really get away with it because there's always going to be someone that's going to want to target you for no reason. And I've seen lots of different, I had to use the term content creator, but lots of content creators respond in different ways. I've seen some that will like publicly shame the person that reviewed them, and they'll be like, here's a shit review, and this person is an asshole, so give us a good review because that person's an asshole, which I think is fine. And then I've seen other people who are like, they might get a bad review from, say, like a publication, and they'll actually challenge that publicly and go, no, I don't agree with what you're saying, and I think what you're saying is you're slighting me because you're being a bit of an arse. Which in the case that I'm talking about, and I won't name names or anything, but in the case I'm talking about, I think he was actually valid in doing that because it was kind of an unfounded criticism, right, and it kind of came across like a public attack, like it's just a smear campaign, right? And then I suppose we kind of ignore it, so I wonder what way you handle it then.
Yeah, usually I ignore it. Yeah. What are you going to do? You
know? Yeah.
I don't allow YouTube comments on strange familiars because we have guests, and, you know, a lot of times these people are telling stories that are very personal, and you have to, sometimes you really have to convince them, like, no, it'll be okay. Come on, tell your story. And like, oh, they'll recognize my voice. And so I just don't want people just being like, oh, this person's full of it or whatever. Yeah. I just, they don't need to see that. So I just don't allow them. But of course, you know, podcast gets plenty of positive and negative comments, and in general, yeah, the negative ones, I try not to even read. Yeah. It's just, I don't know. I'm thinking back to music, when I was doing music, I would not read any reviews because a good review would kind of almost embarrass me in a way. Same. And a bad review would irritate me. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah,
you know, I did get a couple like really well thought bad reviews that I remember reading and going, oh, okay, I see their point. You know, it didn't upset me. I was like, oh, yeah, I can see that. You know what I mean?
Constructive criticism,
maybe. Yeah. As long as it's kind of like not done out of cruelty and not done like, you know, done in a genuinely constructive way, it's a lot easier to go, okay, I can actually see that.
Because I think a lot of times when you're taking criticism, it's either coming from someone who's isolated into one point that hyper focuses on some aspect of their life or their belief, where you probably didn't even really consider it much. And so part of it is you have to recognize what's someone's ego getting really big and annoyed and kind of looking to even the odds or whatever. And what is someone who's actually going, oh man, the sound quality is just a slight bit off. Yeah. Like, and which you're kind of like, oh yeah, well, let's fix that. That will make the whole thing better. Whereas if you're to cater to every criticism, you'll probably dilute, I don't want to say your product, but the thing that you do, the kind of creativity behind it, and then, or the fluidity even in some cases behind it, and you'll spoil something that works for everybody else because, you know, one person didn't like a certain way that you thought about something
trying to dance to the beat of their drum.
And I think as well, what's really difficult with doing, especially with the amount of stuff we put out, like half the stuff I say, I don't really believe. Do you know what I mean? You're just kind of having fun and joking around a bit. I know for Tim, for you, it's probably slightly different because it's a more serious podcast in tone. Like we did one recently where we had to be a bit more thoughtful. We were talking about kind of the riots in Dublin and our perspective on it. And I think that one, like, I don't think I could do that podcast every week because it was such a tightrope. Even just in the whole country right now, it's such a
contentious issue.
Yeah. So and I think the more you deal with things like that, there's a podcast I listen to. It's like an Irish politics podcast. And a lot of time I don't agree with the two people that are talking. Our views would be quite different. But I enjoy listening to it and kind of keeping up to date with certain things and hearing their points of view. But that criticism then would just be me telling someone who has a different view on life that their view isn't correct. And that criticism seems invalid. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
I think a lot of the time, I think that's what upsets a lot of people that make content is like, if you're getting a really barbed review that is like clearly, like you said, hyper-focused on one thing, but it's also just trying to hurt you, it's kind of like, you're like, oh yeah, okay, well that's dumb. Like, it's funny, like our audio quality is atrocious most of the time. I make up what I'm doing when I'm editing these episodes. Like, I do it on a job. I haven't had one bad review about that, but you'd have bad reviews about silly crap that it's just because you take someone off wrong because you say something that they don't agree with. Now, we haven't had many. We've been very fortunate.
We got in trouble that time. You told the story about your cat getting into the dryer by mistake. And someone was like, animal cruelty is never funny. And you were like, but the fucking vet laughed.
So the story was, Tim, that
I'm not laughing at the cruelty. I'm laughing.
No,
at
there was no cruelty. It's a quite funny story. If you're not even the cat survived, first of all, it's okay.
It was actually around Christmas, and that was kind of part of the chaos. Was that I was up in my mom's house putting together like a TV stand or something for getting ready for Christmas, and my mom put on the dryer. I could hear the clothes dryer going, but I could hear like this like dump in the dryer, and I was like, that doesn't sound right at all. Like, do you know what it sounded like if you put like shoes in the washing machine,
right?
You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, what is that? And then I shouted, and I said, Matt, open that dryer there, it's not right. Like, and so my mom opened the dryer and the cat came out. Now the cat had a parm from the heat of the dryer.
Was he dizzy?
Yeah, it looked like something out of like some 80s hair metal band, right? Poison or something. And Wasp.
And so the cat saw them alive.
And so the poor cat ran upstairs, and look, it was fine. But what happened was my ma was like super concerned, and she rang the vet. And the vet, my mom was like, the cat was in the dryer. And the vet was like, how long? And my mom was like, oh, I don't know, like a couple of minutes. And the vet rang up our local radio station to talk to the radio host about getting this call about a cat in the dryer. Because he thought it was so funny because he was kind of in a position where he was trying to figure out how long was it okay for a cat to be in the dryer, you know? And ultimately, the cat was fine. It didn't need to go to the bed.
Like, see, that's the important thing.
All's well that ends well, do you know what I mean? And
no one did it on purpose. It was an accident.
Exactly.
And it is funny that a vet, after his training of trying to make sure animals are healthy and safe, has to go, how long is too long? What's the medically okay amount of time for a cat to be in a dryer?
Yeah, because they love climbing in there. Like, absolutely, you know, cats, like, they'll get in, if this, see those, like, especially in a dryer, because they'll see all the clothes. Sometimes the clothes might be just warm and nice in there, they'll get in or whatever. And a lot of the time the dryer might be finished, so they'll get in when the clothes are ready to go.
Yeah, and they just look like an old woolly fleece. You press the button.
And that's it,
But the person was like, animal getting hurt is never funny. And it was like, well,
Well, that story is kind of funny. I mean, you kind of have to find that story funny because it's not like, it's not some bleak outcome.
Is, it that, is that still Changi? Like,
Changi's still alive.
She's still alive. He's,
she's like, he or she's like, I don't know, 12. Like, you could, like, you know, maybe it did a good, it could have reversed a few years. Maybe it's like Back to the Future, spin it around and it kind of helped something happen.
He went at 88 miles per hour in that dryer.
Yeah. And it's a black cat as well, so it's got a spooky element to it, you know what I mean? Tim, I'll let you take the next question.
All right. Favorite Yule Lad or Christmas cryptid?
Oh,
that's Yule from Lad. Tib on Discord.
The Yule Lad. I like the one that licks your spoons.
We did. Yeah, you did. You guys did a show on that.
We
didn't
did,
you?
Yeah. The Yule Lad.
We did it together, Tim. That was, we did that with
Allison. We did. That's right. Yeah. We did do it together.
I think this was last Christmas we did that.
I think so.
I think you're right. Yeah.
One of the patrons, I did a song for him about the 12 Yule Laddies.
Yeah, I can't remember any of them, so my answer is whatever Ryan says.
They all did they all did loads of bizarre things, like this lad, you know, gets under the sink and does that. I don't think that was one of them. But the one that stuck out to me was he just licks the spoons.
Right.
And I was like,
yeah. Oh yeah.
They do little, like they don't do anything too, it's kind of mischievous. It's not, you know, they don't break out of a mental asylum in a Santa suit and try to murder your entire family kind of a thing, which is nice.
Yeah. What do you got, Tim?
I'll go with Belsnickel. He's our local Christmas cryptid guy. It's a very, very rare surviving wild man tradition that came from Europe to America. So he's basically a Christmas wild man, kind of like Krampus and those guys, but he's ours. He comes from the mountains, bangs on the side of houses, howls and screams and stuff. I did a whole show on it. Very, very similar to Bigfoot in the way Belsnickel acts.
We need to do him next year because I kind of felt like we'd run out of Christmas themed topics to do, but we haven't done Belsnickel. So,
I'd love to do that with you.
Let me know. Cool. Yeah, we'll do that for next year. Sure, absolutely. Mm. For me, listen, I'm going to be a bit more contemporary, a bit more modern. I actually like the Elf on a Shelf phenomenon.
Okay.
Like the Elf on a Shelf, like Tim, is Elf on a Shelf a thing over there?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure they created, like, Elf on a Shelf was an American thing that came. I could be wrong about that, but I thought so.
Yeah. I like it because it's fun. I just like the humor of the whole thing because it's gone insane now where like parents are using it as like a 1984 Big Brother monitoring kind of tool where it's like, but kids like my girlfriend's a teacher for primary school and she's currently teaching kids that are around 6 or 7, but they do Elf on a Shelf in school. But like Kira was telling me, like, these kids are fucking ruthless with Elf on a Shelf. Like there was one kid, she said, right, cute out. He said, it was, so they have to line up before they go into school, like they get in at like 9 o'clock or whatever. So they have to be outside the school at like 8:50, right? So they're all lining up at 8:50. And so the Elf on a Shelf is supposed to move every time you wake up or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So 8:50, one of the kids in the line with all of them says, oh, I need to go into the bathroom. I need to use the toilet. When he goes into the toilet, now keep in mind, he's only 6 or 7. The little fucker goes into the classroom, takes a look at Elf on a Shelf. Kira hasn't been into the class yet today because she hasn't gotten into school.
Yeah, yeah.
He clocks that Elf on a Shelf is in the same spot that it was in the day before. He goes back out and tells all the kids in line that Elf on a Shelf hasn't moved. So there's something going on. So, like, I like the creativity that can be done with Elf on a Shelf. Like, I think it is, like, I know a lot of people are just like, oh, it's dumb, whatever. But
I think it's a fun thing.
You can be very creative with it.
Yeah, my boss had a really good one. He was telling me the other day that he is a kid that's quite young, like 7 or 8, and then his daughters are sort of teenagers like late teenagers to mid teenagers. And he was saying that they had 2 elves this year. So they had a girl elf and a boy elf, and they were getting very, 2 of the girls were really getting into it. So they were doing the elves going on dates and blah, blah, blah. He said one of his daughters is a tomboy. So the other 2 girls were out and they were like, they weren't going to be able to do it that night. So he said, oh, will you do this? And she was like, yeah, grand. So she got like this big Jeep. And now keeping in mind, it's been you know, 18 days of this love story between these elves. Mm-hmm. And she got a Barbie and just like it had a skirt. So she tore the side of the skirt. She just made it look like super sexy Barbie. And she put it in the big Jeep with the elf. And like, so she was all like hot. And then the other girl elf had her head in the hands on the couch. Like she was crying. And she, so the kid came in. He's like, what's happening with the elves? So he's learning about life.
What do you think about that?
Saw a little meme or a short video, and it was from someone in Ireland, and they were talking about Elf on the Shelf, and it says, you know, our ancestors for hundreds of years told us, you know, not to bring these things in the house, and here you all are letting elves in voluntarily.
The fae, yeah, what was it, the fae on the plate, and it's just different plates every week or every day.
That's cool. Like, it's I think I like stuff like that where you're interacting with your kid and using a bit of creativity, and you're getting their mind firing as well a little bit. Do I approve of it so much where it's like some kind of Big Brother monitoring system where it's like, if you're bald, I'll put a shelf.
I love that the memes that are coming through, like, I saw a great one the other day. This might mean anything to yourself, Tim, but there was like a famous person in Wexford.
This won't mean anything to anyone.
You know, the curly whirly. Yeah. So there's like, I love when there's like, you've heard of Elf on a Shelf, but have you heard of Maggie Hurley on the curly whirly? And they had like these pictures, curly whirly, very Irish centric chocolate bar, and Maggie Hurley, a very Wexford centric person.
No one is going to get that reference. I said,
but it's a good, it's just a rhyme. You can rhyme anything, you know? You've heard of Elf on the Shelf. What about Street Fighter on the
Shiter,
the meme is just the video game on the toilet, you know, something like that.
No, they're cool. I think, yeah, I like that one. I think that's quite cool. I think that's like a modern folklore right there. Elf on a Shelf is going to be like, it's like modern.
Have there been any strange like stories about it that anyone's aware of? Like, I'm not, but someone saying,
I'm sure somewhere on Reddit,
there's got to be some good ones.
When you like, so this is how it starts, right? It's become like really mainstream. This Elf on a Shelf. How long would we say it's been a thing, like properly, where everyone's doing it? Like maybe 20 years, not even.
I would guess 10 to 15.
I think so.
So when you have the kids that get to our age that grew up with that, that's when you're going to start getting the horror movies. That's when you're going to start getting the creepypastas. Yeah. That's when you're going to start getting all of that cool shit that comes from Elf on the Shelf. Not to mention, there's a whole like psychological aspect that these kids will be dealing with, of basically having something monitoring them in their house.
Yeah.
So like that might actually breed some kind of fiction as well in the future, where it's like this kind of weird thing that they have to, like, it's pretty crazy because like, you know, when, I don't know about your parents, Tim, or yours, Emin, but like, you were always trying to be good. At, like, as soon as you handed in your Christmas list, you were trying to behave yourself, right?
Trying to push it down. You were trying to keep the badness down.
Be good, right? But these kids, these poor kids, have to deal with something that's constantly watching them, even when they're in their own room. And like, that's what I'm saying is like, they're using it like a complete nanny thing. And like, I remember myself, like, if I fucked up, if I messed up over Christmas, like, if I was being a little shit or anything.
Oh, and your dad.
Like, but I'd catch myself and I'd be, like, in the bed at night on my own going, Jess, I hope I get my Christmas presents. Like, I've been a right little arse holder today. I hopefully Santa didn't see that. Like, but now these kids have to deal with, Elf on a Shelf definitely seen it. So he's watching you.
Again, like, you know, and you know some poor kids are going to be extra, like, worried about it. Like, the elf is in my mind. You can see my dark thoughts, you know, just like Catholic churched out the door, you know, with the Irish style, of course.
It's pretty insane. Yeah, I think there's definitely going to be a lot of complexes. Actually, that'd be a fun one for our listeners and for Tim's listeners. If anyone has any kind of creative Elf on a Shelf stuff they're doing with their kids, it'd be quite funny to hear people's sort of stories Elf on a Shelf and how to do it, because again, it's one of those things, it's only limited by your creativity, right? Where you can do really cool stuff with Elf on a Shelf and have to crack with
it. The elf doesn't have to be on the shelf, you know. Keep it going.
Someone shared a painting in the Strange Familiars Discord of it was Krampus, and he had obviously attacked Santa. Santa's crawling away from him through the snow. There's a big blood streak. It's a very well done painting. And I looked at that and I said, yeah, but Santa would just take out Krampus in no time. And you just have to do a thought experiment. All Santa would have to do is use 1% of the speed he requires to visit every house. Yeah. 1% of the speed. And I believe he might be cookie powered. So I'm imagining Santa eats a cookie to, you know, get the calories, and just 1% of that speed, and he punches the whole Ritten Krampus. That's the
I
end
think,
of the
I think you're right.
It's like the Flash.
Yeah, it does. It's one thing that has never added up about Santa Claus is his weight. I guess he has a year of eating, so maybe by the time, you know, he's finished doing all the presents, he's like 90 pounds, and then he just sort of builds it up over the year, kind of a hibernation. No, she can't eat when you're hibernating. You just eat. Gorge.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Speaking of Krampus, Simon Cavill asks, good old Simon, says Krampus, cryptid, is he a cryptid, an anthropomorphic personification of the dark half of Santa, or is he just a metaphor for the glorification of capitalism at Xmas time? He says, Merry Christmas, lads. Looking forward to seeing you at Loch Ness in 2024. We're going to Loch Ness in 2024, Tim. We're doing a meet-up in Loch Ness.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So what you reckon? Like, is Krampus kind of like a counterattack to the sort of the message of Santa? Was he born out of that? Does he pre-exist Santa? He obviously doesn't, right? I don't think he does.
I have a massive chapter on Wild Men and Christmas in Where the Footprints End.
Lovely.
And we could spend 2 shows on this, so no. I'll try to keep it brief. Right. It's a folkloric creature. It's as much as a cryptid as any of these folkloric creatures are. It comes from the wild man tradition. So I would say, yes, it started out as what we would call a cryptid today. Mm-hmm. And then it turned, you know, the folklore got a hold of it and took it from there.
And do you think that it is something to do with like a counter message to the capitalism? I don't think so, right? Because Christmas wasn't really super capitalistic at the time, right? And
I mean, look at these folkloric things. They were always like going to get you, right?
True. Yeah.
they were to keep kids in line a lot of the times. Yeah. You know, don't walk through the forest at night. This just happened to be a Christmas one.
Yeah, they were the elf on the shelf before Elf on the Shelf.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There we go. Yeah. They were that's something that we ran across in the early days of the podcast when we were doing research on cryptids in, say, Africa and cryptids in all the continents, really. One of the common denominators seemed to be that all of these countries had scary as fuck jungles where they were trying to warn kids to not go out into the jungle at night, basically, you know? And it would have been very hostile and crazy places. And then maybe if you look at, say, maybe America, especially Ireland and the UK, like Ireland and the UK wouldn't have had really dangerous consequences to wandering off at night. You might come across an old badger or something, but
you're not
going to, you know, you're not going to get eaten by lions. So maybe that's why our folklore and urban legends and things became more relatable in a sort of modern sense, where you're like, they're not these big monsters that are going to savage you, but they're things that give you real world consequences, like you're not going to get presents or you're going to have some bad time, but it's not as lethal, you know, that kind of way.
Yeah.
Could be.
Mm-hmm. I do like the idea of an anthropomorphized version of Santa's dark half, like a kind of just an evil version Santa. Of him that he split himself into, had to get rid of like his darkness in order to be benevolent enough to gift all the children at Christmas. That's kind of a fun idea.
Well, Santa is a wild man. He has been saccharined by Coca-Cola and you know, he's this jolly old elf now, but he was formidable, you know, in the past. You know, Belsnickel is one aspect of him. He was part of the wild man tradition. So, you know, he's got a pretty serious past himself.
That's awesome.
Right then, Tim, it's your turn, I think, right?
All right. So this is specifically for you guys. This is from Luke from Patreon, and he's asking, is there a Skinwalker or Wendigo equivalent in Ireland? And does Ireland have a Krampus of its own or something to that effect?
I think it's not quite the same. We do have changelings, but all of our stuff is kind of more fae related. So the idea of a changeling is very, and this actually, this is an interesting one to do actually, because it kind of hits on the Skinwalkers and the Wendigo. So there's a case in Ireland that happened in the 1800s, I believe, where a guy thought that his wife had been taken by the fairies and an exact replica.
Oh, I know this one. Yeah.
And this is very similar. We used it as an example of Wendigo psychosis, which was where people might think they were a Wendigo. There was some sort of weird psychosis thing. Maybe if you had resorted to cannibalism and your mind was quite fragile at the time, based, you know, because that's an obviously a terrible time to go through. And so there's other ones in that where it's in Ireland it's more someone doing like replicating someone that you care about, but it's not them. They've stolen them to the.
We do have a Wendigo one.
Feyland.
So we did an episode about it a long time, not that long ago, called The Hungry Grass.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about The Hungry Grass.
So The Hungry Grass was like, I just have the notes up, I just pulled them up here as a kind of a refresher, but in Irish mythology, yeah, The Hungry Grass, which was known as the Fear Gortach in Irish, is basically a cursed patch of grass. And The Hungry Grass, there was other ideas where it was basically a phantom of hunger that resembled an emaciated human. That was kind of what they were saying. And basically you could say that's a Wendigo, right? A lot of Wendigo stuff was kind of about cannibalism and all that. And if you look at the Irish famine, there was a lot of ties between that and then the famine that would have hit, like, say, First Nation tribes and also settlers in America, right? Where they couldn't grow food. I think in the early days of, like, American settlers, like, they relied on First Nation tribes to show them how to grow the crops that were suited to the soil in America, right? So they showed them how to grow pumpkins, showed them how to grow things that were more native to, like, for example, tomatoes, as you would call them. We would say tomatoes are native to America. They're not, which is really funny because, like, you would associate those with Italy, right? They're an Italian thing. But the Italians have only been cooking with tomatoes for as long as they've gotten to America. So they found the plants over there, they brought them back home. Same as potatoes. Ireland didn't have potatoes.
Walter Raleigh brought them from Peru or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, Walter Raleigh brought them over and he introduced them to Ireland. And then the reason they became so popular in Ireland was because the peasants didn't have a lot of space to grow food because the English took all the good farming land. So Irish people had little, very small plots that were outside the back of their houses or whatever, their shacks basically. And, you know, potatoes grow quite well and they proliferate quite good and you get a good yield from a small amount of land. So that's why the use of potato became so widespread in Ireland. It was just because it was easy, it was cheap. And then that's why we were so affected then when the blight hit. Like, a lot of people say, why didn't they just eat a different type of food? You know, why did this happen? But the reality of it was that all of our crops that we grew that were different were basically being shipped off to the UK because UK landowners, like the UK basically owned our land. So we were ruled by them and they would dictate what we could keep versus what we sent over there. And so all of our good crops were sent to there while we were starving. And even funnily enough, well, it's not funny, it's tragically enough, like there was times in history where the Irish were sent aid by different countries and the UK blocked it. They were like, nah, the lads don't need that actually. So
sorry, son.
Yeah, but I don't know if you noticed him, but there was a First Nations tribe that sent the Irish money at the time. And so in Cork, I think it is here in Ireland, there's actually a monument to that tribe. I can't remember what tribe it is, it escapes me. It might be the Iroquois or something like that.
What year was it?
It would have been a famine time, so you're talking 1850s like something like that. But it's really cool. It's a really cool monument, actually. I'll try to find the name of it here for you. It's Kindred Spirits is the name of the monument, and it's a large stainless steel outdoor sculpture, and it's in Middleton, County Cork. But yeah, it's the Choctaw were the tribe that sent stuff over.
Okay.
Because they felt like that they had sort of gone down the same path. They sent over $5,000. I don't know whether that was at the time or not, but yeah, very nice gesture. So, but yeah, there was a digression there. But yeah, basically we do have between the Wendigo, there are a lot of similarities. So if he's interested, he can check out the Hungry Grass episode we did. It's a weird one. I kind of forget about it because it's not really a cryptid as such, but it's more like an Irish folklore thing. And he'll get a lot of answers there. What else did he ask him?
Do you have a Krampus equivalent?
No. I think Christmas here is very much the standard Christmas that everyone has. Yeah. Like, I don't think...
We would have had a lot. We possibly do back from the pagan days, but nothing that's really made its way into... No. You know, regular culture, if you like.
No.
I'd be surprised if there wasn't somewhere back in time some I'd sort imagine of like Christmas wild man tradition or something like that.
But definitely, we were so steeped in various demons and fae people and elemental beings and stuff from the pagan days. There must be something. Yeah, I'm not familiar with it myself.
Yeah. That was a good question, though. Yeah, because there are... I don't know, you've probably come across it yourself, Tim. There's definitely a lot of similarities in places where if there's famine or if people are starving or hungry, there seems to be a lot of folklore around, like, don't eat
Stop
people.
Stop eating people, yeah.
Because eating people is bad and it'll have consequences. And it actually could come from the fact that it legitimately is dangerous to eat people.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's not as safe as eating other animals. Like, I'm sure...
You can get the prions or whatever.
And I'm wondering, is that what it is? Freddie Terrible asks, what's your opinions on Christmas gonks? He says, not the Wexford one. And would you consider them cryptids based on their Scandinavian folklore sightings or nah? What do you think, Tim?
I have to look this up. Christmas gonks?
Yeah, see, gonks, we invented gonks, but now
kind gonks like are garden everywhere. Gnomes, sort of.
Gonks, oh, okay. Similar, gonks were a thing that no one knew anything about. We do an episode about a gonk. There's a lad in Wexford who's on a Wexford cryptid called the gonk. And we started doing episodes about the gonk. And then all of a sudden, in the last 2 or 3 years, gonks are in all the shops. Now, I'm not accepting any credit for it. We definitely didn't do anything. But it's just super weird that, like, I had never seen the word gonk anywhere except in reference to that guy from Wexford.
Yeah, oh my gosh, there's a ton of hits for him.
Yeah.
It makes perfect sense that his nickname was the gonk when, like, you're like, oh yeah, he looks like one of those. Yeah. But yeah, you're right, until we had done that episode. Now, that could be that your brain not really thinking, but I haven't seen as many gonks. No way. That doesn't make sense, actually. No, we would have known it with that guy.
No, they're everywhere now. And it seems like it's only in the last 2 or 3 years that gonks are just, like, everywhere.
Yeah, we're starting to think we're manifesting reality with this podcast.
I mean, I think it can happen.
I'm not joking, right? I was giving out about dogs off lead the day before that me and Leia, my golden retriever, were attacked by a pit bull. Like, if you listen to the episode, it's a mini fuzz from like 2 weeks ago. I literally go on a rant about off lead dogs and how, like, there's gonna be accidents, whatever, blah blah blah. Literally the next day is when my dog and myself were attacked by a pit bull. Like, and I was like, this is just bizarre.
Ursula was bitten by one like maybe a month or two before you.
Really?
We had to track down the owner and, you know, make sure it had shots and everything.
I'd say it was traumatic for her, was it?
No, she was really good natured about it. She just kept saying, oh, he was cute. And I'm like, okay, but you still need to figure out what's going on with this animal.
Did she lock onto her? No.
I just kind of, it broke the skin, but it just kind of nipped her. It was it wasn't a pit bull. It was a,
staff.
No, I'm trying to think what it was. Anyway, I'll remember, but, it was another kind of big dog like that.
Yeah.
This was,
you know, bad shit. Now what we got in, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Your dog got hurt. I saw the pictures.
She nearly died. So basically it was fully locked onto her for like 2 minutes.
Oh, jeez.
And then it bit me as well, a couple of times on my hands. And, Yeah, she nearly died. Like she in the vets, like they actually seen to her pretty quick, and they were like, "Oh, we think she can actually get out today." And I was like, "All right, okay, happy days." But then they rang me back like an hour later, and they were like, "She has really bad swelling around her neck, and she's having real difficulty breathing." And then the next day, when I went into him, the vet, like, he had a good poker face on the phone, but he was like, "No, he was like, the dog nearly died. Like it went, and I don't even know how this works or how he's able to even spot it, but he was like, your dog went blue. Like it was really in a bad way." So they had to like intervene. It was an emergency basically for the dog, but. Yeah, so she's lucky that it wasn't that bad for yourself and all that, you know, because it can be quite catastrophic. Those bites.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's. We had another incident. Not a bite, but a sort of a repeat incident with a pip. It was too long to get into. I'll tell you about it sometime, though. It ended with me visiting the owner.
Yeah.
They would not come to the door. Very mad. Very, very mad.
Yeah. So I think the cryptids and whether they are cryptids, I'm not quite sure because we haven't done a proper episode on them. So I need to actually answer Freddie Terrible's question. We need to do a proper episode on gonks that is not about the Wexford gonk and actually about actual gonks.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I mean, yeah. My opinion with, you know, folklore and what we call cryptids are so tied together in my mind that it's hard to separate. Like at what point, I really truly believe our ancestors were seeing these things, and that just became folklore over time. And it's whispering down a lane, it changes a little bit, gets exaggerated, et cetera, but that, you know, they're really talking about the same things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when does folklore jump over and become a cryptid, and are any cryptids really a breeding population of things? The longer I'm into this, the less I think there's any breeding population.
I think there's like a perception maybe that our ancestors had that we don't really have anymore. We partially have, or sometimes you have it, or some people have it. But I probably subscribe a little bit to, because I know there were some studies on scientifically, if you're say a sniper out in the field, they could sort of tell when the scope was on them, you know, more than what you would say was just coincidental. And the idea is that you would see that maybe with animals, a kind of a extra sensory thing where they know if something's looking at them, which would make sense. They would need it for predation, you know. I do think maybe when we were more linked with nature, we maybe had access to these things, or we could see more that world. Because even when you think about like Plato and the cave and the idea that we're looking at shadows cast by reality, I mean, for people to be thinking about stuff like that before Christ is, do you know? I don't know. I think we probably did. We're a different type of being, maybe.
No, it's an angle that we've attacked on the pod as well, like right at the start and stuff. It was kind of a... It was always a compelling footnote to put in at the end of an episode where, you know, we did walk alongside giant birds that looked like dinosaurs in Australia. You know, humans walked alongside creatures that weren't far removed from what you would call a dinosaur. Those episodes of ours are like, they're called like Mean Pleistocene. They're super old episodes, but like that was the whole focus of those episodes was. Basically, you know, humans walk alongside giant armadillos that were so big that they used to spend the night in their shell when they were out hunting. So they'd kill these animals and they would basically leave the shell. The shell was like a big ass dome. Think about like a Super Mario shell, like one of those looking kind of things, except it was really big. They could use that as like an overnight shelter when they were out hunting. And these animals... Like, these were legitimate animals that humans walked alongside. Huge sloths that were, like, massive, like, bigger than bears. Then you have, of course, Gigantopithecus, which is, like, what people would always say is, like, people call that up. I mean, I think Rogan was always kind of saying that that's what a Bigfoot might be and stuff. I think with Gigantopithecus, I think there is even a lot less evidence that maybe man was alongside it. I think you kind of have to kind of go in a weird kind of way. It's, like... But they all existed, right? And so there was definitely a point in time where human or human ancestors were sitting around a campfire and they were saying, did you see that crazy shit in the woods last night? Like, and that was probably passed down.
The oral tradition.
And not only was the oral tradition passed down, but like, you would have to imagine, I don't, like, no one really knows how it works, but you have to imagine that that is kind of hard-coded into our DNA.
Well, yeah, I think, all this crazy shit, the way we inherit DNA. Yeah, so it's like why kids are afraid of snakes and spiders. Yeah. They're venomous, sharp teeth. The dark, why is everyone afraid of the dark? Well, because that's when the cat would go for your jugular. Like, you can't see as well in the dark. You're much more vulnerable. So all these things, from an evolutionary perspective, probably make sense.
Yeah, so... It's fascinating stuff, I think. So any cryptid, like if you go back far enough, there generally is, unless you're getting into like the batshit cryptids, like Batsquatch.
I was about to say, yeah, when you said batshit, I was like, it's got to be Batsquatch. Like
when you're getting into those type of cryptids, yeah, that's when you're getting into like, okay, lads, maybe there's been a bit of creative liberty going on here. But...
If you go bat squatch hunting, you need a very, very extra strong umbrella.
Titanium umbrella, carbon fiber. But no, you can understand where they come from. And then I suppose you have to kind of find out and establish, was it a thing where, it is a passed down thing, or is there a legitimate risk of them still being around? I mean, if you're talking about gonks, like there's a lot of, it's a real life cryptid, but it's a real life thing, is like there are people out there who think that there's still a population of smaller, not even Homo sapien, like Homo floresiensis or something they're called, or florensis, I can't remember the exact name, but basically, Tim, they're like smaller than pygmies or around the size of pygmies.
Yeah, they call them the hobbits. The thing about that is that of all those sort of like hairy things that are out there, to me that has the most chance of there actually being a real breeding population of those out there,
because Papua New Guinea is so remote, and I think that's where they think that they are. And like Papua New Guinea is also home to a lot of the cryptids, but it's very remote in Papua New Guinea. Like it's very wild. So it's almost like kind of some of the parts of the Congo where people just don't go because there's no real need or wants to go there. So it's not, you know, it's just not viable for people.
Yeah.
Have you got another question, Tim?
Yeah. This is, so what's everyone's favorite Christmas horror movie, from 80s slashers like Silent Night, Deadly Night, to modern ones like Rare Exports, Holiday Horror is the best? That's from Corey on Patreon.
Yeah, you might have better answers than me. I don't actually, none of them really spring to mind. I haven't seen any. Do you know what I actually enjoyed, and I didn't think I'd enjoy it? The Krampus Christmas film.
Yeah, I was about to say the Krampus was it's kind of semi-slapstick and comedic,
I thought it was kind of lighthearted and funny. And
Irish director.
Was it,
I believe so. I could be wrong. If there's a great horror movie anthology called Trick or Treat.
Yeah.
It's probably one of the best horror movie anthologies, and I'm comparing it with Creepshow and all. It's kind of like a Pulp Fiction meets a horror story. So its timelines are kind of going backwards and forwards and all the rest of it. But the guy who directed that, I believe, directed Krampus as well.
Oh, there you go. Tim, have you got one?
Yeah, Night of the Hunter. It is not only my favorite Christmas horror movie, it's my favorite movie. Calling it a horror movie is kind of a stretch, but it's certainly a thriller. It's a stunning movie. If you haven't seen it, watch it. It's got what's the name of the actor in it? It's from the 60s.
I've heard of this, but I've never seen it.
Yeah, it's hold on, let me look it up, because I'm drawing a blank on the guy's name.
It's like a Hammer Horror. Is this one of those ones or no?
No. It's Robert Mitchum.
Okay.
Yeah.
Shelley Winters is in it. She's basically, Robert Mitchum plays this preacher, and he's a fake preacher. He poses as a preacher, and he's in jail with this guy who committed a bank robbery. Mm-hmm. And the guy's in his sleep talks about hiding the money. So he figures out, like, this, and this guy, I think, got the death penalty or something. So he goes and figures out where this guy lived, and like kind of insinuates himself into their lives. So he's sort of like gets involved with the kid's mother and stuff. And only the one kid knows where the money's buried. And or hidden rather. Mm-hmm. And it's just this thriller where he's like, he's playing nice. The whole town thinks this, you know, he's this great, nice preacher, but behind the scenes, he's like tormenting this kid and just like haunting him. Oh, they end up running away and this guy, you know, hunts him down. Basically he's, you know, it's this really, really, eerie thing, because like it seems like no matter how far they run, this guy's always like in the background. Mm-hmm. And he sings this old Christian hymn, leaning on the everlasting arms, I think it's called, leaning. Yeah. Anyway, and it just becomes this like, whenever you hear that, like the tension just creeps up. But then they end up at Lillian Gish. She's an old silent movie actress. She plays this old woman who's taken in. Takes place during the Depression. So she's taking in all these orphans and stuff and just raising them just out of the goodness of her heart. And there's this real confrontation between good and evil at the end, between her and that false preacher. And it's just the whole thing is just really eerie, but really, really filmed, really neat. And the guy, the director, was a film critic. Oh. And they said to him, well, if you know so much about movies, why don't you make one? And he made one, and this is it.
Yeah, and they were like, damn, we shouldn't have said anything. That was actually good.
It's amazing. Yeah, he is really, really good. I absolutely love it. Night of the Hunter, it's not only my favorite Christmas movie. I say it's a Christmas movie because there's the end, the sort of climax happens right around Christmas at the end there. So I'm thinking if Die Hard can be a Christmas movie, Night of the Hunter is also a Christmas movie.
I agree with
that. I think there's an episode of Black Mirror that's at Christmas is quite good as well, actually. That keeps repeating over and over. I can't remember the theme of the episode, but I just remember it very distinctly takes place at Christmas is a good episode. Mm. I'll do a couple of quick fire ones here, Tim, and then if you have another one, we'll wrap it up then, sure. Boss Baby asks, homemade Christmas dinner or fancy dinner out?
Homemade.
Easy. Definitely. Ben Draconis asks, what is your ideal Christmas dinner and how does it look? So for me, I'll do it real quick. I'm not bothered with turkey anymore, so I'd like a chicken. I do love ham, but I this year I think I'll have roast beef, like a good cut of beef. Stuffing, I love roast potatoes. You have to have a little bit of mashed potatoes as well. I like cauliflower cheese.
Yeah.
We'll do cauliflower cheese on a Christmas dinner.
Would you go mad and go potato gratin?
That'd be mad.
It's delicious, kind of though. Asshole? It is delicious, though.
No, I wouldn't do gratin. That's a bit much. It's always hilarious that Irish Christmas dinners have like three different types of spuds on them. It's like hilarious. I would have carrot. I would have broccoli.
Yeah.
Sprouts? Yeah.
Yeah,
and gravy, lots of gravy.
Of course, yeah.
And then I would follow that up with a trifle.
You're going to say it.
and then on Stephen's Day, my dessert, I'll have the same dinner again on Stephen's Day with the leftovers, which sometimes is better. And I'll have Christmas pulled that day with custard. That's what
here we have, and we'll call it, even though it's not Thanksgiving, but we eat basically the same meal for Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Yeah.
We have what we call like the Thanksgiving sandwich afterwards, where you put the turkey, the stuffing, the cranberry sauce, make a sandwich.
I love the part about Christmas when your body is unable to do anything. You're just panned out on the couch watching whatever Christmas movie is on, and like you wish you hadn't eaten so much, and it's just so sore. And someone like hands you a pint of Guinness, and you're like, or a can of Guinness, you're like, oh, deadly. And the last thing you want to do is drink it, but you will drink it. You will drink it all.
No, the best part of Christmas is when you come down off your dinner and you're able for the little supper later on in the night. Do you have yours early, Tim, or late? We over here, like, it's kind of up in the air, but our family usually has it around 2.
Yeah, it'll be whenever the turkey's done cooking, basically. Right, right around then, usually. Yeah.
What about you, Em?
I'd say
this perfect dinner, by the way.
Perfect dinner. I have to tell you after this year.
You're having some bullshit.
I'm having some bullshit. My my wife's Brazilian, so she doesn't eat meat, so we're having bacalhau. We're having all, she was telling me, she was all this, and there will be rice, and we'll do this, and then I have the potato. And I was like, what's potato? And she's like, oh, it's very good mayonnaise. I was like, potato, just potato salad, like. But the thing about any Brazilian food I've tasted is it's just like pizza we in Ireland.
Now, this is your ideal dinner, is the
well,
question.
Well, see, I'm not going to know. I'm not going to know till the 26th.
Well, as of right now, you know.
Right now, then, it's turkey and ham. Right. Right now, it's everything that you said, including the trifle, pretty much. Like,
Tim, how about you?
Well, I mean, all of that sounds, you know, that's essentially what we're going to have. I'll tell you what I have not had, though, which I'm newly fascinated with, but they're quite expensive. Mm-hmm. The turducken.
All turducken. So that's...
Which is a chicken stuffed inside a duck stuffed inside a turkey.
Yeah, that sounds decadent.
Salmonella-tastic.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's what it was. You have to have the meat thermometer ready to go. But that would be delicious.
We had a deep-fried turkey a couple of years ago. But like, it's not deep-fried, like
was that crispy like KFC.
Yeah, basically. So my uncle's a plumber. He was like super careful about making sure everything was okay. But it just does it quicker, really. Like, it tasted quite similar to your regular oven turkey. I thought it was going to be like a KFC kind of a thing.
Maybe,
Man, I think I'd be into a KFC turkey.
Oh, yeah. They probably did. Do they do that? Surely.
If they haven't, then...
I know Popeyes does over here, which is a...
Yeah.
No, it's a better chain. I don't know if you have them there. It's better than KFC.
Oh, nice.
You can order, but they're expensive. We were going to get one for Thanksgiving. It's like $100 for...
What?
I was like, nah, that's all right. We'll just make our own.
Yeah.
Tim, do you ever go to Applebee's and listen to Creed?
I've been to Applebee's and I've heard Creed, but I can't say I've combined.
Rob has me believing that they just play Creed at Applebee's. And no matter what you do, it's just, when you are with me, over and over again on the jukebox.
I get, for some reason, I don't know why, I'm not even in America, on my personal Instagram feed, I get targeted ads about how good it is at Applebee's when Creed comes on.
He sent me a video one day on my phone out of nowhere, and it was like Creed singing some song during like a halftime show for American football, and there was a guy like flying through the air wrapped in those silks, you know, the kind of the aerial ballet stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And the tagline just said, "The European mind cannot comprehend this."
Creed.
So you don't have Applebee's there?
No,
unfortunately not. I'd love to go on Theradova and listen to some Creed.
I would love to. If I went to
any, you only know of Applebee's. You've not experienced the Applebee's experience.
Yeah.
Okay. No, but I've heard like $1.80s are supposed to be a good crack. You know, their margaritas that I think are $1.
That's insane.
Mozzarella, frozen mozzarella sticks that they cook up for you. Sounds like quite the experience.
Is Applebee's the one where lads get into fights late at night, or is that a different one? Is that Waffle House?
Could be Waffle House. That's
probably Waffle House.
Is that known for people getting into fights?
Yeah.
It's like the last thing.
I've seen some videos.
Oh my God. Like, if I was going to get waffles, the last thing on my mind would be fisticuffs. Combat. You know, combat.
Waffle combat, yeah. And one quick last little question here is from Metal Ghost. And this is not Christmas themed. But he says, why the F?
Oh my gosh.
He's swearing, he's very angry. Do radio stations play a mix of techno, club classics, and hip hop in the morning? The last thing I want to hear on the way to work when I'm bet to shit is that they play that shite, that they're playing clubs at 2 a.m. This is a genuine question, by the way, if you have any insight. I think
it's a simple answer. They haven't heard Creed yet.
Yeah.
Their radio station would be the Scott Staff Creed appreciation radio show.
I think what it is to wake you up, right? So they're so basically night radio is fantastic. So
it's very chill, yeah.
I used to be indiscriminate in my hatred of radio, right? And I didn't like radio at all. Now there's a whole separate conversation to be had about Irish radio, and there's a monopoly held on it, and not everyone can set radio stations up, and pirate radio stations are kind of not a thing here, so that's a whole different thing. I personally find radio not good, but if I listen to late night radio, like if I'm driving home at 12, 1 in the morning, the shit that they play then is basically what I listen to.
Yeah.
It's nice, it's chilled, and the host is talking really.
Yeah, they have that nice sultry voice.
Now we're going to play Mark Knopfler. Mark was doing this. He was doing this when he was thinking about that song. And you're like, oh yeah, cool, Mark Knopfler. And the host is all chilled out and everything. And I like that. I would even like to host nighttime radio.
Something like that.
Because the hosts are a lot like podcasters. They're just talking shite. Like,
no one's like, listening. No one cares what they say. Like, yeah.
And they'll be telling you the history of a song and stuff. And you're like, this is quite insightful. I really enjoy this. But then morning radio is, and it's morning pop radio. They're trying to wake you up. They're trying to get you going to work. Like, yeah. It's all about, they are interpreting what they think people want to hear at that hour of the morning. So they think that the masses, and most of the masses do, want to be engaged, they want to be woke up, and they want to have some gobshite shouting at them. All right, guys, how are you doing today?
That does make sense, yeah, because I was going to say all the early morning radio hosts are fairly full of energy.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be a morning person.
If you look at, I don't know what it's like in America, Tim, but if you like chart the radio hosts of a show, so like we have like a Today FM here or one of those, like if you look at the age of the host, their content and how it progresses through the day, it's almost always super high energy younger people in the morning, kind of people like our age maybe in the middle of the day aiming. Then it gets to more senior hosts at around 4 or 5, which is when people are finishing up work. And then at night it gets into, and now we're going to play The Stranglers, Golden Brown.
Yeah, you have that interim as well where Etton can kick off. There was Cormac Battle, who used to be in... You know him.
Carb Dog,
yeah. And he had his own radio show, but he'd always be playing, like, you know, at the drive-in and stuff like that. Like, stuff that wouldn't get much radio time on the Irish stations. I think that was, like, 8 o'clock. Mm. So you got 8 to 9.
Yeah.
You could hear some interesting tunes that you mightn't have heard before. Yeah. And then he was off, you know, again. And then you slowly go towards the tired man.
So, Tim, do you have any insight?
No, not really. My days of listening to radio were far, far behind me.
Mm. Which is a shame.
Did you guys have like the morning like shock jock thing there?
No. Like Howard Stern?
Yeah, yeah.
No, we didn't. Ireland was, and I'm sure you're aware of that, like as well. Like Ireland was ruled by an iron Catholic fist up until about 20 or 30 years ago. So like we wouldn't have had like Howard Stern.
That wouldn't have flowed here.
See, Ireland is too small for someone like Howard Stern. Like Howard Stern is great in America because there's loads of people that would be into Howard Stern, like to the tune of millions. Whereas in Ireland, the amount of people that would be into Howard Stern, and I don't mind Howard Stern at all, actually, like, you're only looking at maybe 100,000 people would tune in. And, like, it's only an island of 4.5 million people, right? So you just don't have that audience size here to support Howard Stern.
And as well, like, when The Simpsons came to Irish television channels, never mind that we had them on the English channels for years and years, there was lots of stuff about people saying it was a bad influence on children and all this sort of stuff. Bart Mania was in full swing, so yeah, we were very very sort of kept down society for a long
like
time.
Howard Stern wouldn't have flopped.
No, that wouldn't have been able. We wouldn't like this.
No.
Podcast.
Would, oh no,
we would have been. We would have actually been excommunicated from the church.
Have.
I'd say.
Yeah, no. Like, had we if Monster Fuzz existed in like 80s Ireland, like we would have absolutely been targeted.
Yeah, our families would have been like, no, you're alone, exiled.
It wouldn't exist. So yeah, no, I think we didn't have the shock jocks. We didn't have anything like that. So yeah, I think that probably answers the question. Tim, have you got anything there for us?
I'm sorry?
Have you got any questions there for us before we wrap it up?
Oh yeah, let's do one more here. Let's see here. Sorry, I wasn't prepared.
All right.
Okay. Not a cryptid or spooky question, but I always enjoy hearing what people's favorite Christmas song is by who, if it's a cover.
From Laura on Patreon. Christmas.
Newborn king to see pum. I like Bing Crosby and David Bowie, right?
That's
a good one,
And I do like Driving Home for Christmas by Chris Rea. Did that make it over to the States, Tim? Driving Home for Christmas?
I don't know.
Oh that's a really nice song.
Oh, you would know.
You'll like it.
If you had heard it, you'd know. It's a good tune.
Just about a guy trying to get home to see his family. And that's got this really, when you hear it, you just feel nice.
That's a brilliant song. It's like Chris Rea.
It's like when the whiskey just hits your belly and you're like, oof.
And he's got a great voice. It's a great tune. Yeah. I think that, and look, the Pogues, obviously, rest in peace, Shane McGowan. You know, New York. I mean, it's such a great tune.
Great. Yeah,
it's
How about you, Tim? Have you got any?
I like, this is like, you know, betrays my oldness and my, this is before I was born, so I guess maybe not. Mm. But I like, there's a Peter, Paul, and Mary song called A Solen.
Right.
And it's very, very nice harmonies. It's either a traditional song or a couple of traditional songs that kind of melded into one. So it's quite nice. And the harmonies are very beautiful.
Yeah, Santa beautiful baby. Harmonies are all right. One way to do it.
That's a tune.
Yeah. Yeah, and then like I saw a great meme the other day where it was like Mariah Carey as a demon being dragged back to hell, and it just said Mariah Carey on the 26th of December.
There's also a Whamageddon this year. My kids told me about where like you lose if you hear Last Christmas.
Nice. So as soon as you think it's gonna come on, you have to like cover your ears. That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. If you lose Whamageddon if you hear it. So and covers don't count. I guess there's a few covers of it. It has to be the original.
That's brilliant.
So, but we lost very early on. I heard it shop or something.
There's a lot of there is a lot of good Christmas tunes. Like there's a lot.
Oh yeah,
Dean Martin. There's a great one is Billy Idol covering Jingle Bell Rock is one of my more obscure favorites.
Billy Idol.
That's a good one, and the video is hilarious. I like David Bowie and Bing Crosby. I think that's like a little drummer boy, is that what it's called?
Have you seen the beat for beat parody video with Will Ferrell?
Yeah, I have. It's very good. Yeah. If I ever had a time, I'd love to me and Eamon to cover it as well in that same vein, because it's a hilarious tune. Like, but yeah, I suppose, look, we didn't get to all the questions. We have a couple there that our listeners asked that are more sort of non-Christmas themed, so we'll probably get to them in like another mini-fuzz or something sometime soon.
Yeah.
Allison and I, so if your question didn't get answered and you're a Strange Familiars people, Allison and I will answer them at some point.
Yeah. And we'll do, Tim, we'll now in the new year, we're kind of all set up now, and the period of upheaval is coming to an end. The last year, 2023, was a giant pain in the arse, but we should be good to get some more collaborative episodes out, I think, in the new year. So definitely looking forward to having you on board for some of them, if you're up for it.
Anytime.
Yeah, cool. So for everyone that sent in questions, thanks very much, folks. Yeah. In terms of Christmas, yeah, have a happy Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, enjoy the holidays.
That's something. You all say happy Christmas over there.
Yeah.
We do say merry as well, to be fair. There is a... Like most things would have a Merry Christmas on cards and stuff. That's I think they're rivals, but they respect each other. Happy and merry. They're okay with each other.
It's used interchangeably. You rarely hear Happy Christmas over here. Merry Christmas dominates the Christmas greeting.
What? Merry Christmas sounds crisp.
It's a merry time, to be fair.
It is a merry, yeah.
It's more merry than it is happy.
Drink and have merriment.
Yeah. Merry is more on theme.
Yeah. So I'd like to start bringing that back as well, just to describe someone. What's he like? Oh, he's very merry.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, gay is another one. Very gay.
That's gay Christmas.
Yeah, have a gay Christmas, everyone. How's about that, Tim?
All right.
Right. Have you got anything you'd like to say before we wrap it up for Christmas, Tim?
Oh, just happy Christmas, everybody. If you're out there, be careful and have a great time. Hope everybody's having a great time, and we'll be back soon.
Cool. Cheers for listening, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, Allison, we said we were going to do a special every week for the Etsy shop up until Christmas. I think I'm just going to extend the one from last week until Christmas. So what that was is if you order any one of my books, just send a note and say, hey, I'd like a remark, and I'll do a remark in it for you for free. But yeah,
of course, now it's probably not going to get there.
Right.
Unless you live like within a 10-mile radius.
Right. But if, you know, maybe you...
You want to give, you know, you're not going to see somebody till later.
Yeah, or maybe one for yourself, you know?
Yeah, that's true too. Yeah.
So that'll be good through Christmas. Again, just order any of my books on Etsy, doesn't matter which one, and then make sure to include a note, so I'd like a remark, and I'll put a remark in the book for you. It's a little drawing. There's going to be a bonus Christmas show with Brother Richard. That'll be for everybody. I'll get that out sometime, hopefully before Christmas. It's not a super Christmassy show because we actually talked about a lot of dark stuff. A lot of talk about demons and kind of like darker spirits in it. Mm-hmm. But we try to do a Christmas show every year with Brother Richard. It just happened that we talked around Christmas for this. So this is our very un-Christmassy Christmas show. And if you do want a very Christmassy Christmas show with Brother Richard over at the Flowered Path, we did a very long show that has Brother Richard, a lot of Brother Richard in that as well. So you can check out the Flowered Path Christmas special we just dropped. All right, that's it. I'll be back with that bonus episode. Like I said, hopefully before Christmas, we're going to have a patron episode. We're going to make Allison answer these questions. And in case something happens and none of those happen, I just want to say Merry Christmas to everyone who celebrates. And we'll be back soon with more Strange Familiars. Strange Familiars is a production of Dark Holler Arts. Intro and background music is by Stone Breath. If you want to hear more or purchase music, you can go to stonebreath.bandcamp.com. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/strangefamiliars, where you can join the Strange Familiars gathering group. We're on Instagram at Strange Familiars, one word, no underscore. And you can find us on the web at strangefamiliars.com, where you can also find our merch, strangefamiliars.com/merch.
Summer's end, the branches bend with leaves of gold and red. Many things will take to wing, far away to fly. Soon the veil of the pale will part once again, and within the haunted wind. Thank you. by fallen bough and rusty plough, pale the winter's night.
Yeah.